That is a possibility, yeah.
Okay, I turn these on and it's great. And you're recording too, Jack. Don't erase anything you record until we know that it worked out. Because I don't have confidence in myself or these magic systems. Yitz, how do you feel? You look better than when I saw you last. Can I inherit? And Michael's walking better. Can I inherit? All right, we'll see what happens.
What did your mother say about getting old?
Takes courage.
That's right.
To get old, and that's what it amounts to.
I quote your mother very often.
All right, today is Sunday, September 1st. Believe it or not, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Aleph Elul. Today's the real Rosh Chodesh, Tkiyat HaShofar, L'David Hashem Ori. And September 1st, 2019, and I want to say Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov, Shavua Tov to my wonderful students sitting in front of me. After class, please come with me to my office. Vic already got a gift from me. I have a gift for all four of you sitting here, which I hope will be of some value. The picture everyone is talking about, so as I've said in America, I'm remembered for one shiur, my hesped for Joe DiMaggio, and all my publications will result in being remembered for one picture. But it is an achievement. I want to say good morning to the students in front of me and to all those listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish universe. I thank you. I was very moved. I couldn't walk Dalet Amot, not in Queens, not in Lakewood, not in Brooklyn, 770, not in the Five Towns, without submarines rising and people declaring me their Rebbe and how many years they've listened to me. And I have to say it's very moving. I just apologize. I would like to thank everyone personally for their nice words. But generally what happens, you're talking with one person, another person comes over and interrupts. So let me say thank you publicly. With Shevach Vahodaya Tachadish Baruch Hu, my 61st year of teaching Torah here at Sonu Fenecha, Adonai Elohai Velohai Abotai, Shelo Yerad Dva Takala Al Yadi Velo Ekashel Bidva Halacha Chas V'Shalom V'Yismuchu V'Chaverai. Shelo Omer HaTamei Tahar Velo Al HaTahar Tamei Velo Al HaMuta Asur Velo Al Asur Muta Velo Yikashlu Chaverai Bidva Halacha V'Yismach Bachem Ki Adonai Yitin Chochma Mipiv Dat Utfuna Galenai Vabita Niflaot Mitoratecha. Okay. We left off last week, we're in the middle of a very fascinating topic, and we're going to work on it this week. I don't know if we'll finish it, but it's a question that all of us are haunted by. Some of us have relations that are not religious, and we want to invite them for Leil Shabbat, the whole problem of driving. Some of us listening are in the rabbinate or kiruv rechokim, and this problem repeats itself 1,000 times over. Some of us, like yours truly, working for the branch of the Mossad that dealt with Soviet Jewry, are you allowed lechalel Shabbat in Russia to travel to a shul on Shabbat because your being there may influence some of the Jews to one day wake up to the fact that they're Jewish? And we'll come back to this. This is a real shaila. It's not a simple shaila. And there are many variations. When we ended off last year, we spoke about a question being raised. Remember I quoted to you from a Bita'on Machon Aliyah. What if you have a Brit? Baruch Hashem, you have a son. And the eighth day is Shabbat. And you take the typical American story, and by the way, it's even possible here in the State of Israel. Time and again, I just had a lot of nachat over Shabbat. My father-in-law had a first cousin who became a big Zionist in Europe, and he ran to sail on Yom Tov Sheni on the boat to Israel. This is the late 30s. His parents called the police, the Polish police. They came to the boat, they took him off, And he wound up spending the Holocaust in Poland, survived by miracles, everyone wiped out, came to Israel, threw away Kol HaTorah Kula, like many people who went through the hell of the Holocaust, read the memoir of the Ritshua. And believe it or not, the only story only in Israel, my nephew, that means his first cousin, once removed, my nephew was in the army, fell asleep on the bus, and it went to the very last stop up north. A lady was on the bus, and she said to my nephew, "Look, there's no more bus out of here today. You're not the first soldier that fell asleep. Feel free to eat. I meant to tell the kollel, bring breakfast. I forgot it's Rosh Chodesh today. You guys, daven lamp. To me, it's the middle of the day, but to you, it's just the start." And the lady said, "Come to my house, you'll call your army base, and you'll sleep, and tomorrow morning you'll go back." So he called his mafakeid, explained, he fell asleep, was an accident, he'll be in the base as early as he can tomorrow. Fine. The kid sees the house, this lady later told us he didn't even drink a glass of water. Treif, garnished. Kid comes home, comes back for Shabbos to Yerushalayim, and my sister-in-law hears the story, and she says, "What's the name of the family that you stayed with?" And he gives the name. My sister-in-law looks it up. This is about 20 years ago, what I'm talking about, at least. And she calls. There were phone books then. Calls the family, and she starts talking with her, and where were you raised? And she mentions the kibbutz. And my sister-in-law says, "Oh, my husband... his father had a relative on that kibbutz." And my sister-in-law mentions the name, and the lady starts screaming, "That's my father." So that she gave a lift to her nephew, to her cousin, who wouldn't even drink a glass of water in the house. And they all came from Belzer Hasidim. But one survived the Holocaust, and one was in America before the Holocaust. So we family got together, and it was just amazing. The American branch of the family, everyone from the Israeli branch, nothing. And then my daughter, just the other day, went on, I don't know, the new world, I don't know what I'm saying, Facebook, Schmacebook, whatever it is, and she discovers this family, and there are pictures of the next generation, one of the daughters-in-law with her hair covered down to here, the grandchildren with kippot. No, here you have a typical story. People are chozer b'tshuva, they're going to make a brit on Shabbat. Do you invite your relatives? How can you make a brit without inviting your relatives? Your relatives are going to come, they're going to be mechal Shabbos, they're going to drive. Isn't this the same question with the bar mitzvah, with the bat mitzvah on Shabbat? You're inviting your relatives. So if you recall, we ended off last week's shiur that this question was asked, and there was a difference of opinion. Do you do it? Don't you do it on Shabbat? And they quote Reb Moshe, they quote others, but what a very, very fascinating shaila, okay? And the opinion seemed to be that perhaps we should do it on Shabbat. We're not responsible for the filo Shabbat. There's a special mitzvah to do the brit on the eighth day, and we're not allowed to postpone it. All right, and I mentioned to you a number of different opinions. Rav Shmuel Halevi Vosner felt they should postpone it. Others felt they shouldn't postpone it. So one of my students who studied here in the Kollel many, many years ago works for the OU today. So Rabbi Dov Schreier sent me an email, very, very fascinating. Subject, Bris on Shabbat. Shalom, Rabbi Rekepet. One of the rabbis in my office was learning in Lakewood at the time and had a Brit on Shabbat. When he called his non-religious family to tell them he was making the Brit on Shabbat and he had a place for them to stay for Shabbat, the family told him, "Just tell us where the Bris is and we will be there." He went to Rav Henkins at Tzal and asked him what to do. Rav Franken told him, "Make the brit on Sunday." So it's very interesting. Here you have a source quoted in the name of the greatest Posek in the United States before Rav Moshe Feinstein, and here Rav Yosef Eliyahunkin tells him, forget about doing the Brit by Yom Hashmini Yimolch Alatol, forget about it, be mevatel it, you're being mevatel in a sense, a mitzvah tasei, but better there shouldn't be Chilul Shabbat, and you do the Brit one day later. All right, so that's a fascinating source. But now, let's come back to the question. And this question becomes very, very important for Yeshiva University. Why does it become very important for Yeshiva University? When I was growing up, there was no concept of outreach. We were just struggling to keep the few Jews we could keep. And I believe Vic Snow, who's not that much younger than I am, I think you can testify, you up on the east side, who heard of outreach? There was Bnei Akiva. Bnei Akiva had an influence, I don't deny it, but it was not, Bnei Akiva was not established to outreach. Bnei Akiva was established to attract youth to go on Aliyah. That was Bnei Akiva. Agudat Yisrael came onto the map. Who spoke about outreach? Outreach begins in America, 770 Eastern Parkway. Lubavitch, they were the first ones to talk about outreach. Then outreach developed. YU gets involved in a primitive fashion. Torah leadership seminars. Then you have the NCSY. Then you have, with Yeshiva University, the last 20 years, the Center for the Jewish Future, called CJF. Now, the minute you get involved in outreach, you are haunted by this problem. Outreach is predicated upon people driving on Shabbos. Where are you going to outreach? During the week, people are in school, people are working, people are busy. The weekend, all right, people are available. So this question now comes up with CJF in full force. Any activity, any shul activity, any kumsitz, any oneg Shabbat, any guest speaker, you name it, you're going to get involved with the problem of people driving to shul. And here let me give you all the sources. Where is the most basic source of all? And this goes back to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Dafav Amit Pet. Lifnei Iver lo titein michshal. We're not allowed to be machshil another Jew. It's a nisa d'oraita. You give another Jew tarfis to eat. You'll give another Jew, tell him to light candles for you on Shabbat. It's a nisa d'oraita. Lifnei Iver lo titein michshal. All right. Tell me, what about if you do something for the other Jew which is forbidden, but he can do it anyway? He doesn't need you. For the sake of argument, you have a store. You have a store. The Shaila comes up time and time again. And in your store, you're selling, let's say, non-kosher wine. You're selling stam yenam. All right, you're selling stam yenam for goyim. You're allowed to sell to goyim. What's the isa? In Poland, Jews were heavily involved in the trade of wine, the trade of whiskey. And along comes a Jew, and you know he's Jewish, and he's buying non-kosher wine in your store. All right? Are you allowed to sell to him? Or do you have to say, Mr. Jew, how dare you buy this wine? It's not kosher. An interesting shaila. So the Gemara is very clear. I'll give you the words of the Gemara in a second, but the Gemara says very clearly, if the Jew can get the wine elsewhere, then there's no lifnei iver. He has perfect choice. He can buy it in your store, he can buy it in Safeway, can buy it in the AMP, can buy it in ShopRite, can buy it in Pathmark. You're not forcing him to buy the non-kosher wine. But if you're the only one selling the non-kosher wine, then absolutely you cannot sell the wine to a Jew. Lifnei iver lo titein michshal. And this is the Gemara. Minayin shelo yishit adam kol shayin lenazir. Ve'eva minachai lifnei Noah. How do we know you're not allowed to give a nazir a glass of wine? a kilo of grapes, he's not allowed to eat it. He's a Nazir. How do you know you're not allowed? What about Eva Minachaya ben Noach, one of the Sheva Mitzvot b'nei Noach, that a non-Jew is not allowed to eat Eva Minachaya? So imagine this Jew says, hey, he's a guy, let me give him Eva Minachaya. Talmud Loma lefnei Yiva lo titein michshal. And then the Gemara says, when does it apply? The koi betray ivrei de nahara. That's the rubric. There are two different sides to the beach. You're on one side and he's on the other side of the water. The only way he's going to get that treif wine is if you hand it to him. Yoshit, the Gemara. You'll see the Rishonim, you can look it up. The Tani lo yoshit, veloka tani lo yitrein. The only way he can get it. But if he's on the same side of the shore with you, there's no prohibition. He'll buy from you, he'll go everywhere else and can buy the wine as well.
All this is in the Gemara.
Oh, yeah, and that's...
This is what, Eruvin?
No. This is about the Zara Dafav Amidbet. This is the basic source. Now, the inferences of this Gemara are very, very fascinating. And I'll show you sources, Achronim, who say it, but let me make the Gemara tangible. And I have to tell you, it's not a simple matter, because when all is said and done, you're talking Chilul Shabbos, you're talking rabbis encouraging people to drive on Shabbos. Let's call a spade a spade. But let's look at it. Two sides of the river. One side of the river. Tell me, what is this Jew doing Friday night if he doesn't come to shul, if he doesn't come to the Onig Shabbat, if he doesn't come to the outreach session? He's at home, turning on lights, playing with his computer, playing with his television, playing with his DVDs. Ribbono shel Olam. He's writing letters. He's doing Isurim after Isurim after Isurim. If you invite him to an event in your shul, all right, he'll drive home 3 hours into Shabbos when the Sudat Leil Shabbat is over. But for 3 hours, he will sit there and will not be Mechalel Shabbos. He will not eat Nevelet and Treifat. He will not play with his computer. He will not write letters. Do you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is a very, very interesting inference.
Whose opinion is this?
You'll see. It's a Russia wise. I'll give you all the sources. We'll get there. Yitzchak will get there. We'll get everywhere. But I have to tell you, it's not an easy issue. Because if this is the case, where are we different than the conservative movement? And if you recall the 1953 responsum of the three rabbis from the Committee on Jewish Law of the conservative movement, and we're talking three men, Rabbi Akis, Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Friedman. I knew Rabbi Friedman very well personally. Rabbi Adler I didn't know, but I his father was the Rosh Yeshiva of MTJ before Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Rabbi Agus, I knew his brother was my teacher. I did one of my masters under his brother. And these rabbis wrote, among other things, when they were matir, they said, what are we fooling ourselves? They're going to drive their cars anyway on Shabbos. So better they should drive to the temple than they should drive to go shopping on Shabbos, that they should drive to a ball game on Shabbos, that they should drive to a movie on Shabbos. They're going to drive anyway. So you see, when you take this thinking, remember, we're walking on a very, very tight rope. Where are we different than the conservative movement? But this is the basic Gemara. Then there's another very fascinating Gemara that particularly in Chabad, I'll give you the source later, where this Gemara is quoted and requoted. And it's a Gemara that we all know, but I'm going to ask a simple question about the Gemara, and you're going to see, you think you knew the Gemara, but you took it too superficially. The Gemara in Yuma Daf Lamed Hey Amit Bet. Tanu Rabbanan, Ani V'Ashir V'Rasha Bayin L'Din. People come to Din. Why didn't you learn Torah? Okay? And Ani, the poor person says, well, I couldn't learn Torah. I was poor. Tarud B'Metan Asai. I was busy making a living. I had to struggle. All right, I know what this means. I've had this. Let's not go into detail. But the life in Israel was not always a bed of roses. Today, it's still not a bed of roses, but that's beyond the struggle. Basic panasa has improved. Okay? So you say to the ani, omrim lo, klum ani hayita yotremi hillel. What the heck are you telling us, you phony? Would you mean to say you were poorer than Hillel HaZakein? And Hillel HaZakein, and then they tell the famous story, Shebuchal Yom V'Yom Haya Osa Mishtakeh B'Tropik. Every day he worked hard to earn a tropik. What is a tropik equal to? A shekel, a lira, a jolt, a ruble, and half of it he used for food for his house, and the other half he went and he would pay the Shomer Beit HaMedrash to go in to study. So first of all, you see from this Gemara that they charged money for study. We can't complain that. Why you? Do you have to pay? Are you in the Kollel?
Registration.
My days, I think we also had to pay registration, but why you always boasted that studying for Smicha was chinam. On the other hand, don't they give what would it be called? Not fellowships, because I know I try to get someone in from 770, and I get the beautiful answers. Let them contact us immediately, and then they say, "Yeah, we'll take you, but we can't give you a fellowship." It seems some of his friends have fellowships. It hurts because this person has the ability to be a great, great leader. And people who run YU, who run REITs, have to have vision for the future, not just the moment in front of them. But okay. But look at Hillel, that he struggled so, and one day he couldn't find work. He was, I don't know what he was, a Sabal. You know, the Rav always spoke about how the Sabalim used to have a meeting place, and people would hire them to carry things for them. So he went up to the roof, and you know what happened. It was a snowy day, and Shmaya Ve'Avtalion saw that the skylight, right? That's the word we use in English. That the Aruba, the skylight, was blocked, was dark, and it was Shabbos, and they see Hillel totally covered with snow. And they went up, and they took him down, and the Alpia Rub gets Shkadesha Yishma Devel Lokim Chayim Bit Bishmave Avtalion, and so much snow. And they went the next morning, he was there all night frozen. And what did they do? Parku Chitsuku Sikuku Hoshivu Kineget Hamedora. Amru Roi Zele Hillel Lechalel Alav Et HaShabbat. And they said that this man was worthy, we should be Mechalel Shabbos. All right. No, the Gemara is beautiful. You hear this when you're a kid, very inspiring. Tell me, was there any really Chil Shabbos here? What did they do? They took him down and they dressed him, they warmed him up. They didn't make a fire. Yitzchak, you were ready to say they made a fire. Look at the words in the Gemara. It doesn't say they made a fire. V'hoshivuhu kineget hamedura. The fire was there. The fire was there from before Shabbat. So what are they saying? Ra'ui zel chalel alav et haShabbat. It could be, and the Darshanim deal with this. You'll see, I'll quote Shuvit, you'll be able to trace it if you wish. Could be the Pshat is, no, there was no Chalal Shabbos. Thank God they were able to save his lives. The fire was there, everything was there, everything was sufficient. You know, they were allowed to dry him off on Shabbos. But what it means is that an individual like this, when you think about what's going to be in the future with him, we could have even, if need be, been Mechalel Shabbos in the full sense of the word. We could have done anything and everything to save his life. We didn't have to make cheshbonot. Look what's going to come out of him. So you see, if you take that this is the pshat in the Gemara, it means we have to have the ability to see the future. And this is the whole concept of Chazara B'Tshuva. I can tell you a story. Someone's daughter got engaged to a person from South Africa. The young man was a Baal Tshuva. His parents knew next to nothing. They came, children get engaged. You want to meet the family, right or wrong? You become Muchutanim, right? Yiddish Machatenenschaft. And they came Cholamoid Pesach to meet the parents in Jerusalem. And you know what they brought us a gift? Jack, do you remember what they brought us a gift? 2 bottles of whiskey that they bought in the duty-free on Shabbos Cholamoid Pesach. New? Do you know these people today are total Shomrei Torah u'mitzvot. Okay? It was a difficult shaila. I got the shaila. I had no solution. All you can do is empty out the whiskey and feed it to the fish. The fish should rejoice. They're entitled. But the future, that's an unbelievable Gemara with Hillel. Look at the future. Now, I'm going to quote from people, you know, the Center for the Jewish Future. We're starting to quote Shevet and Shevet. Now, if you recall last year, and here I have one young man here, I might as well learn your name already, because I said, were you here when I spoke Thursday?
Yes.
So what did I speak for and waste my energy? But one student is the whole world, be aware. So can I have your name?
Ellie Weinstein.
Ellie Weinstein. Weinstein is not a good name today. Gafni, what should we do with it? Gafni, Seder, we'll leave it for you. Are you married?
Yes.
So we'll leave it for your wife to decide. My name was picked by my wife. And if you're a good boy, you asked me one day how she took revenge against the teacher in Ramaz with the name, previous name, but never the maiden name. Okay, back here. Ellie, 1 second. You studied in Yeshiva College?
Yes.
Okay, you had Rebbe...
Sims,
whatever. But in the morning you had Rebbein Gedolei Yisrael? All right, so you were probably raised with the attitude that Reb Moshe Feinstein is a great makil, and Reb Moshe Sternbuch is a great machmir. That's the way I would have reacted if I were your age growing up. And there's only one problem with that. There's a Mishnah in Ediyot, Rav Yossi Hashari. You know what I'm talking about? That they were mad at Rav Yossi ben Yoessa. He was Mekil in 3 cases. And you can't be Mekil all the time. You can't be Machmir. Now, on this very question that we're going to now cite more Achronim, Rav Moshe Feinstein is the greatest Machmir in the world. Such a Machmir that I don't know if I'll reach it today, I'll show you how contemporary Lamdanim sweat to explain Reb Moshe, why he was so machmir, because he's way beyond. Jack, do you remember what Reb Moshe said? If you invite someone Friday night to your house and you know they're going to drive home, you're a meset umediach. You read about it in Parshat Re'eh? Meset umediach. Steve breathless shaking just to hear those words. Reb Moshe Sternbuch,
who is the Av Beitin of the Eda Charedit, Michael, what am I dealing with here? He feels if you invite them for their good because you want to influence them, you're allowed to invite them. He has no ifs, ands, buts, says a svara. Rebbeinu Shalom, wow, what are you, a Reformed Jew? And this is Reb Moshe Sternbuch, all right? So you see, not always can you say Vic, Reb Moshe Feinstein is Mekil, Reb Moshe Sternbuch is Machmir. Each one has a way of thinking, and they have to express their opinions. Ultimately, you get a consensus, but that can take 100 years, 200 years. Doesn't happen overnight.
Did he ever change his position?
Reb Moshe Sternbuch is... I'll tell you. I have my own theory about it. I'll go into how they try to explain it.
In other words, he would not allow you to invite or
Correct. But I have my own opinion about Reb Moshe, I'll tell you. You have to have known Reb Moshe, and you have to know life. Sometimes when you write something, you don't realize, you shoot without thinking. In other words, what you're saying is correct, but if you would think it over a second time, maybe you don't have to write that. Now, how do I have this opinion? Can anyone tell me? You've heard me tell it to you over the decades. Reb Moshe has one shuv in Or HaChaim about the American flag and the Israeli flag in the shul. Remember that shuva? Or first volume, Or HaChaim, Young Israel's, where I grew up, you always had in the shuls on one side the American flag, on the other side the Israeli flag. And Reb Moshe was asked if you're allowed. And he says, look, you don't make a fight over it. There's nothing wrong bringing a flag in. But he refers to the Israeli flag as the flag of the Rishayim. He uses very sharp words. So, Reb Moshe, you can see it in black and white. I'm not making it up. His words are even sharper than what I just said to you. So, Eli, Reb Moshe's grandson and great nephew came to see me. It's before you were born. Why did they come to see me? I'm living here over 50 years. So, why did they come to see me? Because Reb Moshe wrote a tshuva against me. And it's a long story, I don't want to go into all the details, but a wonderful individual who Vic Snow knows, knew, Yankele Goldman. Remember Otsas from 33 Canal? So Yankele Goldman saw how much we're struggling here in Israel. He knew me from America. He's such a fine individual. He's a Torah Vadas graduate who volunteered for the American Army right away. His father was a Gerach, I still remember his father, Gerach Chassid. So he came to see me in Israel, and he gave me $200. You know what that was like, someone giving me today $20,000, maybe $40,000, $200. And he said, do a work for me in English on Reb Moshe's tshuva. Anyway, if you turn to Rakafer Aaron Chelik Aleph or Chelik Bet, you'll see what came out of it, okay? Now, when he's about to publish, Reb Moshe Aser doing anything in English, Reb Moshe heard about it, David Feinstein used to have lunch with Yankele Goldman in the store every day. They would have lunch together, and he said, my father Aser's not doing so. He wrote a tshuva that I heard in Yerushalayim, there's an individual. So he sent his grandson and great-nephew, if I wouldn't mind if you published the tshuva, but he's not going to mention my name. I said to them, halavai, he should mention my name, you follow? But it did, the tshuva appears, but my name is not there. It just says, I think, Eisa Talmud Chacham B'Yerushalayim, but so when they came to visit with me, I started asking them more questions. So they said to me, you should know, my grandfather told me he never regretted anything he wrote or published except one line. What's the line? When he wrote about the Israeli flag, there was no need to put the maledictions in. That's the only thing he ever regretted. You follow? So it could be here Reb Moshe when he was writing, and I hate to say it, but Rakefet deep down agrees with Reb Moshe 100%. He put in
You're inviting people to drive on Shabbos. Merciful Meidiach. You follow? But I don't think he thought through the end. Meisetu Meidiach. It's, going a little extreme. But, okay. Halacha Lamaisa, you have two different points of view. Now, one at one extreme, one at the other extreme. I'm now going to quote what the Center for the Jewish Future put out. And this is a mimeographed copy that was handed out. And it was compiled by Rabbi Katriel Branda. Can you give me his name in English? Who are we talking about? Katriel Branda? Yeah, Kenny Branda. Kenny Branda, one of our heroes. By the way, he's doing a fabulous job, I understand, from within. He took over for Rabbi Riskin, and he's doing a wonderful, wonderful job. And you got to give him credit because he stepped in from America to an Israeli system, but he's very, very capable. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's Rei Shemaim. His father was a classmate of mine, a year ahead of me in yeshiva. We were classmates by the Rav. But very, very capable. So Kenny put together this source sheet. And here, the most beautiful part of the source sheet is a letter that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote. And here you have Rav Shlomo Zalman, you have a letter, you have, I'll give you other sources, but here you have a man who was the heart of Psak in the world. At his funeral, I can tell you, Eitat Nemana, you had as many kippot strugot as you had blackheads, as you had strimals. The man was universally loved and respected. Rabbaron Lichtenstein, the great Rabbaron Lichtenstein, he became a total disciple of Rav Orbach. I can tell you, I spoke with Aaron, and he left the Rav's Psakim and went to Rav Shlomo Zalman. I couldn't believe it. I'm a Yantif Sheni Shel Galyat. You know what I'm talking about? Did you study? Where did you study here after high school? Shalavim. Shalavim, you're not involved in this, but with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, he paskined, a tourist has to observe 2 days here. I looked at him and he said, just put on film. Shlomo Zalman, he totally surrendered. And this Rav Aaron quoted, if you recall, I cited this to you in a talk he gave in Gush to the alumni or published in the alumni. He told the whole story, how Rav Shlomo Zalman was Mekiel. But this letter is very fascinating, and I'm related, Yiddish Machat Penim Shaft, I'm related to the one who received the letter. Harav Michal Shon Shlita, Chaver Hanhalet Yeshivat Or Sameach, Michael Shon, my wife's, what would it be to my wife, a cousin, I believe, her cousin, who's the wonderful people, no longer alive, left many children here in Israel, grandchildren. So one is married to a Shon. The Shon family was from Riverdale. This was part of the family, came in Aliyah. Well-to-do family and the new generation totally involved in outreach, Or Sameach. And he asked, this letter is from 1988. And he asked a number of questions, including, and this is Or Sameach, this already is part of the tremendous outreach that we see today. I would even use the word industry. If you go down to the Beis Medrash, there are books they're trying to give out to capture people like us to be involved in outreach that the Tzioni Dati world has to get involved today. Rosh Yehudi, it's called, in Tel Aviv. And are you allowed to invite anyone who you know is going to drive? And if you have Shlomo Zalman Paskins, you invite them and tell them you have a place for them to sleep. V'af im lo yikabel et ha-hatsa'ah, ein chayivim lahagid lo sheyimaneh mishum kach lavo. And v'gam ein tzrichim lahazir oto she'asur lahagia berechav. This is almost the words of Reb Moshe Sternbuch. That, you know, the guy is not going to listen to you. Nevertheless, you invite him. This is legal fiction. And you don't have to worry. And you don't have to tell him. You don't have to warn him. I don't want you to drive the car. I don't want you to be Machal Shabbos. You don't have to warn him. Answer number one. Answer number two, the parking lot on Shabbat. And here Rav Shlomo Zalman says that the parking lot must be closed all day and Shabbat and Yom Tov. Now, I need not tell you this is an issue that haunts us. I told you about Stamford, Connecticut, the big Orthodox shul a few blocks from the big hotel where all the retreats are held and all the outreach. It's a hotel owned by Hasidic Jews from Canada, and they a five-star hotel, and they make it available at a reduced rate for all the Jewish Torah happenings. And a few blocks from the hotel is the big shul. My Talmud is the Rav there today, Rabbi Danny Cohn. The parking lot is open on Shabbat. It's amazing. And they say Rabbi Ehrenkrantz, who was rabbi there under 50 years, he permitted it. And I can tell you in Atlanta, Georgia, no, you tell me, the big shul where so many people became from, they claim Rabbi Feldman Sr., and maybe Rabbi Feldman Jr. too, Talmidim, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, Ne'er Yisrael, Rabbi Ruderman's Talmidim. And Rabbi Ruderman permitted them to keep the parking lot open on Shabbat. So it's an amazing thing here. And you have some Chabad places, I'm told, where the parking lot is open on Shabbat. No, where are we at? Where are we any different than the conservative movement? But these are Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. But Rav Auerbach felt the parking lot has to be closed all Shabbat. Then he deals with other questions. Mechalos Shabbos b'parhesia, are you allowed to count them for a minyan? I need not tell you how much has been written on this topic. He says, better not to count them for a minyan. However, if you have a kosher minyan, then you're allowed to give them an aliyah. In other words, it's how do you define them? They're Mechalalei Shabbos. Are they Jews? Aren't they Jews? What is their status? Do you remember, you have the Gemara in Yevamot, Afyud Zion, Lozazu Misham, they didn't leave until they declared the 10 tribes absolutely non-Jews because they totally assimilated, total Goyim. The whole Shiloh of the Gemara, when any guy is Makadesh, a Jewish girl, you should be Chashish L'Kedushin, many is from the 10 tribes. So it's very fascinating. Where do you draw the line?
What do you say about a Kohen?
He doesn't deal with it, but with a Kohen Mechal Shabbos, I gotta tell you, the Rav felt 100% you should encourage them to Duchen, because if you don't encourage them to Duchen, they'll never know their Kohanim. And the psul in Duchenin is a psul of kuna. It's not a psul of kuna. In other words, who can't Duchen? You have a coin married to a Gioret. You have a coin married to a Grusha. Right? Then you have a tremendous problem. How can he Duchen? He's Mechalel his Kedusha. He's married. He's not divorcing her. But if someone's Mechalel Shabbos, the Rav encouraged them to Duchen. In the state of Israel, I don't know Yitzchak. The Shiloh would be a little bit different because here you know you're a Kohen, you're going to remain a Kohen, the Beit Din will consider you a Kohen, they're not going to let you marry a Grusha, and yet you're a Mechalos Shabbos. Interesting question. But Halacha L'maisa, I haven't seen the Shiloh come up here, but I would imagine if they're Kohanim who come into the shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, they should be encouraged to Duchen, encourage them to be part of the shul, encourage them to be part of Klal Yisrael, encourage them to be Kohuna. Now, and Kenny Brander goes on and on, quoting all the sources we've quoted until now, including the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, including the remind me after class, I'll be happy to make a copy. Now, this comes up again a little bit later, and here too, published by Center for the Jewish Future, Lifnei Iver, and inviting non-religious Jews to a Shabbos meal by Rabbi Joshua Flug, F-L-U-G. If I'm not mistaken, he too works. It says that this was published by Yeshiva University Center for the Jewish future. Now, he quotes, and this is another tshuva of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that I can give it to you in print. It appears in Mincha Shlomo, Chelek Aleph, Tshuva Lamed He. First he summarizes it, and afterwards he publishes the tshuva as an actual source, the original tshuva, xeroxed from the publication. As if this also is a shaila that comes up time and time again. No, I was in the rabbinate. Are you allowed to make a Kiddush on Shabbat in your shul? Remember, no one believes me today, but it's a fact. I actually, people called me from the area, and I was happy to hear that they're still alive, and they were happy to hear that I'm still alive. But I did build the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. You follow? You know what I'm talking about? Today, the President of the United States, Dobbins and Livingston with the Kushner family, right or wrong. Rakefet, known as Rothkopf, built the first. We began, look at the map. Newark, then you have Maplewood, South Orange, Livingston, Springfield, West Orange, all conservative, all reform. And one doctor in the middle of life decided to do tshuva. He was a kohen taka married to a giyoret. It killed his father. His father was a sheikhet, a tzaddik, Ephraim. And it hurt his father so. So in the middle of life, he said, I'm building an Orthodox shul in Maplewood because Newark is starting to change. And it's named until today Beth Ephraim in memory of his father, Reb Ephraim Weinstein, your name. And they needed a rabbi, and Dr. Belkin needed a job, a part-time job for a guy named Rothkopf because he was appointed him a Rosh Yeshiva, supplement his income. All right, to make a long story short, 62 to 69, I built it brick by brick. I went in Aliyah from there. In my office hangs the invitation to the farewell party the day before we sailed. But be it as it may, how can you give a Kiddush on Shabbos? People come, forget about that they drove to shul. They don't make bracha. They don't know what bracha da. Lifnei Yiver. Lifnei Yiver. Wow. Ellie, what are your plans for the future? You're becoming a Jew or you're going back to Gullis? What does your wife say? Les Micherin, no?
Figuring that.
So that means you're going back to Gullis. All right. You're going to build the yeshiva. I want you to do great things in Gullis. All right? You get a balabas who wants to perpetuate the memory of his grandparents perished in the Holocaust or Hasidic Yidden. He gives you $18 million. Now you're making a Kabbalat Panim for $18 million. You better call in a caterer on a level, right? But this man, you're going to drink a l'chaim with him. He doesn't make bracha. He's traditional a little bit. He has feeling. He cares. He knows the shul he doesn't go to is an Orthodox shul. You follow? He knows that's the way Mr. Gris said to me that the unser Zukunft is the Kinderlach mit der Pais. Joe Gris, you're sitting here. Revere his name. He said to me, he wasn't a from, he gave, his brother was from, it's a whole story. But the Fifth Avenue Synagogue, that was the shul he went to. He said, the future's with the kids with the payers. And he did great things in Borough Park. His name is all over the place there. But how do you invite this guy? He's going to drink, he's going to have cake, he's going to have a herring. I don't know if it's a sophisticated kiddish, a herring, all right. There's three different types of herring. Chalent. The works, nu man darf machen brachas, right or wrong, you have to make brachas. How are you allowed? Nu Yitzchak, a serious question. Rav Shlomo Zalman deals with it, exactly. Mi shebo elav orei chashuv, asheinenu shomer Torah u'mitzvot. And are you allowed to feed him? And the guy, you even... You're going to ask him, wash Natilat Yadayim. He'll be embarrassed. What are you, asking him to do. What are you asking him to do? What is this primitive ritual? What, you don't think I wash my hands when I come out of the bathroom? And Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's an unbelievable tshuva. He paskins all these yisurim you're talking about. It's an isha de rabbanon, isha de oraita. It's an isha de rabbanon. Netilat yadayim, it's the rabbanon. A bracha is the rabbanon. But if you start driving him crazy, he's going to walk away with hatred, with enmity. That's an isha de oraita. You're going to cause him lo tisnat achicha b'vavecha. You're going to cause him to have enmity, to be acrimonious to a fellow Jew. Wow! And not only that, he's very down to earth with Shlomo Zalman. Here, we just spoke about Elie Weinstein. He got $18 million from this guy. If you're going to push him away and drive him crazy with bracha, you're not going to get $18 million. He's going to cut back. Why do you interfere? The guy's giving tzedakah. He's doing kiyumim d'oraita, tzedakah, Torah, yirat shamayim, children, Talmud Torah. The whole basis of Yiddishkeit is based upon what he is doing. If this is the case, use common sense. Accept him. Don't badger him. Feed him. Honor him. The results outweigh any prohibition involved. So, wow, they quote this tshuva of Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Alachat kama v'kama, when there's a chance he'll wake up, there's a chance he'll be inspired, there's a chance that you're opening a world of Torah to him. Invite him Friday night. Don't stand on the issue of the fact that he will be driving. Invite him. Attempt to influence him. Give it time. Don't stand on the issue and push him away. And this tshuva that he wrote to Shon, here it's cited in Hebrew from Minchat Shlomo Chelik Bet Siman Dalid, that Vakasha l'nichul minyan tfila avur rechokim שרוצים לקרב אותם לתורה ומצוות על ידי השתתפותם בסדרי תפילה. You want to be makar of them. Der Tinok shenishpu'u. And he paskins 100% permissible. And those who live far away, latzilo mokum lina, but you don't have to force them. Don't say, don't come if you're going to drive. Ein tzrichim lahazir oto shasur lahagia berechav. So the Center for the Jewish Future absolutely takes the case that one can be lenient. If you look into Rabbi Flug's pamphlet that I just cited to you, at the end he says, how could Reb Moshe use such strong words? Mesis umediach, he finds critical of Reb Moshe. But if you take Rakefet's approach, you can understand Reb Moshe was riding, he got carried away, listen, it's Chilul Shabbos, it's driving, it's a terrible, terrible act. So Reb Moshe wrote what he wrote. But CJF, Yeshal Milismoch.
Two questions. First of all, what's the justification for leaving the parking lot open?
I'll tell you. I have a lot of trouble with that. Nothing has been written about it. So all you're dealing with is Torah Shabbat Peh. I once asked Manny Feldman, and he certified that my knowledge is correct, that Rav Ruderman paskin to leave it open. The attitude was, let them come to the shul. And they do claim in Atlanta that all the people that originally used the parking lot ultimately became Shomrei Shabbos. And that's where the whole concept of a Shabbos house began. It's in Atlanta, Georgia. But I would imagine it's the same concept. We're not doing anything ourselves. We're just leaving the world normal. If you want to be Mechallel Shabbos, all right, freedom of choice. We hope you wake up and see the truth. I'll tell you, this came up too in Russia. The whole question of going to shul on Shabbos. And I got caught up in this. I write about it in Washington. It's a very delicate question, which today, thank God, doesn't exist, but we're talking under the communists. The communists allowed in every city, basically, one church and one synagogue to stay open. Why did they allow it? Because they're very smart. They're going to be stupid people who still believe in religion, primitives, babushkas. So let them have a place to go. And if we know it's one church and one synagogue, we'll have our agents there. We'll keep our hand on the pulse. So now you have Moscow, which is a tremendous city. But it does have a fabulous transportation system. I don't know if you're aware, the underground there is like a clock. And you can get anywhere. It's spokes on the clock. You can get anywhere by knowing where you're going, and you go, and here you take a train around, and then you take the train going where you want to go. And you can get anywhere. And it's all centers around the Kremlin. So now, they came up as the Balei Tshuva. They wanted a Daven Shabbos. How do you get the shul? So can you imagine, you buy a ticket, a monthly ticket, and you sew it in your coat under the lapel. And if Shabbos falls September 1st, you buy two tickets. You have August and September, and you have them sewn in with two tefirot, and you show it to the lady, and she signals you in. So this was the question, and they say Rav Moshe and Rav Ruderman were matir, but they never put it into writing. When I came the first time, January 81, the Tshuva movement was already gaining momentum there. So this was the question they asked me. And at that time, the Baal Tshuva were all religious Zionists, because Rakefet went and got Agudat Yisrael involved, for better or for worse. Read, I think it's in the new volume that I'll give a gift in a few minutes. It could be that later many became Haredim, but at that time they said to me, ask Rav Gorin and get an answer back to us with the next people you're sending. When they learned there was a Talmud of the Rav, they were a little bit ashamed to say, ask Rav Gorin, so they said, ask Rav Gorin and the Rav. So when I got back, I made an appointment to go see Rabbi Gorin, and he got hysterical. He started yelling at me, what are you, Ma'ata, conservative rabbi? Eichav shallah hatir davar kazeh. And his poor wife was all upset. She thought, I get upset. I'm too old to get upset. Even then I was. After my first rabbinate, I don't get upset. So that's before Maplewood's South Orange. So he would not be matir. I called the Rav, and the Rav, you know, totally different, said to me with all my understanding and commiseration and empathy, but if we're matter something like this, we're no different than the conservative movement. And he said, I don't see how we can be matter it. So the Rav Gorin and the Rav both said the same thing, but each one said it with their own personality. So I agree with you. But I can tell you a fact that Rabbi Manny Feldman told me, that they had a psak from Rav Ruderman not to make an issue out of it. When I was in Atlanta, Georgia, a number of years ago, scholar in residence, so I see out of that parking lot on Shabbos, a few cars are coming out. So they told me those are not Jews. Those are people who work there and take care of the kiddush and the building, and they're driving home on Shabbos. Okay, they're goyim. What was the other question?
I mean, Lower Merriam closed their parking lot.
Right.
Getting them in for Friday afternoon.
Right.
Parking lot was closed.
Right, no.
There was a conservative shul in Levittown where the rabbi was Orthodox, Rabbi Feuerwerker. I don't know if you ever heard that name.
Feuerwerker, yeah.
He closed the shul. He closed the parking lot.
A conservative shul.
Conservative shul.
And they agreed to it.
He was the rabbi, and they listened to what he wanted, and they closed the
yeah, but they, how did they listen to what he wanted? If it's the conservative shul, he wanted separate seating. They didn't listen. There was
the conservative shul, but he did what he wanted to do in terms of his seat.
Hey, Bunting.
The question is, in the issue that the conservative movement dealt with, in terms of what happens if there's a closer Orthodox shul?
If there's a what?
Closer Orthodox. So the family likes a certain rabbi.
Right.
But there's and they want to go to that shul.
Right.
There's a closer Orthodox shul.
And so what are you asking? I don't understand.
The tshuva in the conservative movement, as far as I understand, is they permitted driving.
Right.
But they permitted only to the closest conservative shul.
So you're saying that they no, that when they say that, I'm pretty sure Rabbis Friedman, Agus, and who was the third one?
Rabbi Waxman. No,
Waxman comes afterwards. He quotes them.
Adler.
The three were the Adler. Adler, Friedman, and Agus. They permitted. I'm sure they would tell him go to the Orthodox shul. But I'll tell you, what happened was because they permitted it, it became totally permissible. And conservatives drive on Shabbos, not just to shuls, they drive to hospitals to visit people. And it's a total breakdown. And they themselves later admitted it by the 1980s that was the end. But you're asking an interesting question. I don't know. I would say they would agree go to the closest Orthodox shul. Okay, let me go a step further now. Chabad, and this is the biggest player in the world on this issue. And Chabad has a very interesting minhag. When a couple gets married, if the families are, well-placed, well-known Chabad families, they have what's called a gift. They give out a tshura that's given in honor of the wedding. And over the years, I've given out material here in class that I got as gifts at weddings that they made available. This is a kuntres, an entire kuntres, given out as a gift to a wedding. I'll give you the details. The entire kuntres deals with this question. Kuntres. Shalotet same miklal Yisrael b'techalel Shabbatot kol yomeha chalel alav Shabbat achad kidei sheyishmor Shabbatot habei. It's quoting from the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Better to be machalel Shabbos one time and save someone that they should be able lishmor many Shabbatot in the future. This was given out at a wedding in 2009, the Mishmichat Nisuin Shal Rab Menachem Mendel Halevi VeRivka Gurevitz, and the Mechaber was evidently the father of the Kala, Shmuel Zianatz. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name correctly. It's Zion Aleph Yud Aleph Nun Tzadi.
It's all his wedding.
It's his daughter's wedding.
Zions,
you say? That was Zions, I remember, Zions. But no, they pronounce it differently. His son is a very dear student of mine, Nachum Shmayahu. So this is his sister's wedding, if I'm correct. And this entire country deals with this problem. Chabad has this problem every Shabbat. All their outreach. Let me tell you a little story, a true story, to make it real. I picked up a big family named Gluck, not the Eugene Gluck family, the man who just died. Not that family, but also, I know. Not Eugene Gluck, it's a very wonderful family, and they're also Hungarian survivors. Wallenberg saved their lives. So one brother moves down to Bal Harbor, Florida. True story. If you know Bal Harbor, there was a tremendous big shul. It's there. It's called the shul. Chabad. Tremendous, unbelievable shul. In the middle of the shul, there's a little synagogue transferred from Poland with the Aron HaKodesh, with the Bima, with everything. What an experience to daven there. And the rabbi is classic. And he speaks, and davening begins at 10 in Shabbos morning, and it ends at 2 in the afternoon, and tremendous kiddush, and heavy money there. So my friend moves down to Bal Harbor, and this is the shul he goes to. There's a little shtibel a few blocks away at the time. And he's davening there, and here a guy sitting next to him with a black hat, and guy shuckling, and a kartel, and the works, and sees him 1 week, sees him a second week, strikes up a conversation with him, and yes, he loves the rabbi, he imitates the rabbi, he emulates the rabbi, and my friend asked him, where do you live? And he mentions he lives about 30 miles from the shul, and in a suburb. And my friend says to him, so where do you stay Shabbos? He says, oh no, I drive. And I come, you know, and I live too far, I can't walk. And like, this is normal. This is normal. Normative, I should say. And my friend got so upset that he started going to the shtibel above a bank, 2 blocks away. P.S., if you go to Bal Harbor today, you have a choice. The shul or Young Israel of Bal Harbor. My friend spearheaded the building drive, a $12 million building. All right, it's not as big as the shul, but it is beautiful, it is packed, and the rabbi in charge of outreach was a student in this very kollel, Rabbi Avraham Fried. So, this is a real problem for Chabad. How do you run them? Shuls, outreach, events. And here you see, people can daven Shabbos in, Shabbos out, and they remain the same Mechalalei Shabbos. How do you do it? How do you do it? So here's, this entire kuntris is based upon the Gemara in Shabbat, Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Bet. Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Bet. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Tinok Ben Yomo Chai Labriot Mechalalim Alav Et HaShabbat. David Melech Yisrael Meit Ein Mechalalim Alav Et HaShabbat. Wow. A tinok, one day old. Tinok, what an infant, a baby. You all have children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Who the heck is this? A little baby, nothing. One can't speak, can't talk, can't think, can't learn. And you mechalal Shabbos to save that baby every Isha. And David, Melech Yisrael, Ne'im Zmirat Yisrael, the man who wrote the Tehillim, the man who fought all the battles, the man who gave us sovereignty, the man who planned the Beit HaMikdash, desperately wanted to build it. David, Melech Yisrael, dead? You can't even do anything. Finished. The body is muktzah. You leave it, you walk away, you can't do anything. Vic, where did the Shaila come up in modern times? The Israeli army. You're fighting a war. What do you do Shabbos? People, lo aleinu, are killed in battle. You know what it means? The army moves forward and you're leaving bodies strewn on the field? It's an interesting Shaila. All right, halacha lemaisa, because of morale, we paskin la halacha, we clear the bodies away as quickly as possible. The Gemara already dealt with the shayla. Knew what was the eitzit? Same Gemara. Bread, put the challah on the body. It's a dava basis la dava muksav shayna muksav. But knew, go on a battlefield, you're going to find bread. You know, you're dealing with bullets flying all over. You're dealing with war. You're dealing, you have to see what a battlefield is like, Lower Lane. I know. I fought in two wars. I know what a battlefield is like. But interesting, the Gemara says, Amr Torah, Tinok Ben Yomo, Bimachal Shabbos. And this is the famous Gemara I just quoted. It's paraphrased by the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Chalel Olav Shabbat Achad Kedei Sheyishmor Shabbatot HaDei. David Melech Yisrael Meit Ein Mechalalim Olav Kiven Shemeit Adam Batel Min HaMitzvot. And that's the tremendous difference. A person alive, obligated to do mitzvot. Person is dead, totally exempt. If he's exempt, then you cannot be Mechal Shabbos. A person who's alive, be Mechal Shabbos. Do whatever you can, because if you save him, he will be Shomer Shabbos 1,000 times over in the future. What a concept. Now, transfer that to outreach. Person comes, Shabbos meal, all that goes with it. He's a Mechal Shabbos. But he will become a total Shomer Shabbos if you're successful. Take the Gemara literally. Be Mechalel Olav Shabbat Echad, and as a result, he will live on and be Shomer Shabbos 1,000 times over in the future. What a Gemara. I'm going to show you Halacha L'maisa, how this applies. But give me a story that brings this to life. No? Who's the greatest Baal Tshuva in modern-day Israel? Uri Zohar. Right or wrong? I've told you. What's the story of Uri Zohar? You got to remember, when I came in Aliyah, Uri Zohar was Mr. Entertainment, Mr. Israel, movies, his TV show. And suddenly on the TV show, he had half-naked women in the studio with pictures in back of him. Suddenly, they're covered up. I'll never forget this. The next week, he appears with a kippah on his head. The third week, his tzitzis are sticking out. The fourth week, he leaves television altogether. Knew everyone wondered, how did he become from? This is Mr. Israel. He's made the statement that I've quoted and requoted 1,000 times over. He said, I received a wonderful education in Israel, but the most important part of my being, my essence, my heritage, I received absolutely nothing. No concept of what Torah is, what Torah is about, what Torah consists of. His famous statement. Uri Zohar.
We have the experience of visiting my brother outside of Orlando, about an hour and 15 minutes outside of Orlando. There's a Chabad house that my brother proudly took me to.
Right.
The Chabad house is in the middle of nowhere. There are no houses within a mile. You know, so no one can ever become Shomer Shabbos there. It's impossible.
All I can tell you is the shliach.
They build around the
shliach. The shliach to where was Nixon born? The President Nixon. Remember a Favof in a name, a Mexican name outside of Los Angeles, further south, closer to Mexico. Yuba, something. Anyway, there's a Chabad house there. Very successful, a well-known rabbi. And he told me whenever he succeeds, he loses. Whoever he makes from either moves away to Brooklyn or moves on Aliyah. So that's the answer to your question. What can I tell you? But this question here, how did Uri Zohar become from? So then there was a terrible tragedy. It was in 88, as I recall, right before the election. A bus was attacked coming through the Jericho Valley, the coming past Jericho, and they bombed the bus, Lo Aleinu, and Rabbi Zilberman's daughter was killed, Rabbi Zilberman, Zichrono Levracha, we're talking about from the old city, from that, they wear tefillin all day, and they noticed that during the week of Shiva, Uri Zohar was constantly coming and going, constantly going. And then he broke down and told the story that he had a lot of questions, and people told him, go to this Rabbi Zilberman. He's of German-English origins. He's very with it. He's part of the world. He'll understand your questions, and you'll get answers. So he went to see him, and he throws all his questions at the rabbi, and the rabbi tells him, I'm not going to give you any answers. I just want you to come and spend the Shabbos with us. But on one condition, you stay in a hotel. Well, we're talking Shari Chesed. There are many hotels nearby with an easy walking distance. Uri Zohar's not a poor person. He stayed in a hotel. And at the end of Shabbat, he said, he had no more questions. All his questions were gone. And the rest is history. So they asked him, what influenced you? And you remember what I told you? He said, after davening, when the whole family came together to hear Kiddush and start the meal, the father walked in and all the children stood up for the father. And he said, that ended all my questions. Where I come from, he says, children don't talk to their parents. And that's the same story with the plane I was on in 1980 that Artscroll writes up, and for once I can certify Artscroll told the truth. Right in front, it was 1980 January, I'm on my way to Denver, Shaliach, the Jewish agency, the Israeli government, and sitting right in front of the plane, there were different planes, that was called the bulkhead, was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and next to him is Yeruchim Meshel, the head of the Histadrut, two world-famous people in different worlds. And standing over Rabbi Yaakov is his grandson. And Yeruchim Meshel and Rabbi Yaakov are talking in Yiddish, Mama Lashon for Yeruchim Meshel, for Rabbi Yaakov. And Yeruchim Meshel asks Rabbi Yaakov, who is that young man standing over you and helping you and waiting on you? And Rabbi Yaakov says, it's my grandson, it's my enikel. And Yeruchim Meshel was overwhelmed, said, my grandchildren don't even talk to me. We're in two different worlds. Our whole relationship is different. And this is your grandson. And he was overwhelmed. And then, you know the rest of the story that Rabbi Yaakov says to him, I'll tell you why. You come from a world where they believe that man descends from apes. I come from a world where we believe that Maimon HaSinai was the greatest moment in the history of mankind. My grandson honors me because I'm closer to Maimon HaSinai than he is. Your grandson looks at you, he says you're closer to an ape. Why should he honor you? That's an amazing, I mean, he said it as a vitz, you know, a joke, but it's a joke that has a very powerful message. So this Gemara becomes crucial, crucial. You have it one place in Shabbat Kuf Nanalef Amid Bet. You have it in Yuma Pei Hei Amid Bet. And in Yuma, the same concept. How do we know that you can be Mechalo Shabbos to save someone's life? Et Shabbatai Tishmeru. And Vishamru B'nei Yitrelat HaShabbat. Amra Torah. Chaleil alav Shabbat achad kidei sheyishmar Shabbatart harvei. And this is an open Gemara repeated twice.
Shabbos Kuf Nun what?
Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Bet. And this is an open Gemara repeated twice. And this entire kuntres, he quotes all the sources that we've quoted until now. And he quotes Reb Moshe, and he quotes Reb Moshe Sternbuch. But nothing compares to this Gemara. Now, this Gemara gives birth to an entire halakhic discussion that we'll talk about next week, but this discussion is exactly what we're dealing with, except the Gemara discusses it in a different context. The halacha comes up in a different context. And what do I mean? And I want to conclude with this. What do I mean? Very simple. The world that we're talking about today is a world of Chilul Shabbos. We want to reach out. We want these people to be from. This is a new phenomenon. In World War I, the overwhelming majority of the Jews, the Sephardic world, 99%. The Ashkenazic world, 60-70%, were totally Shomer Torah and Mitzvot. No one ever dreamt of such shilas. It's 100 years now that we're struggling with this terrible problem of Chilul Shabbos, of Jews who don't know what Torah is about. But before that, how did this problem come up? Very simple. The Gentiles captured a Jewish girl. And they took her out of the village on Shabbos. If they retain that girl, she will grow up being a total Gentile, a total Mechalelet Shabbat. Are you allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat to save her, to bring her back? Shalot Tetzei Miklal Yisrael Utechalel Shabbatot Kol Yomeha Chalel Olav Shabbat Achad Kidei SheYishmor Shabbatot Havei. Here it is. Halacha L'maisa, give you another example. Communism. Russia. You can get a Jew out, sneak him out. The border is open. But the only time you can do it is on Shabbat. Are you allowed to go in, sneak them out on Shabbat, be Mechalel Shabbat, do every Easter under the sun, but you've pulled a Jew out? The same concept. Tov sheyechalalu Shabbat achat, that these Jews should come back to Yiddishkeit. Halacha l'maisa, a question I had to deal with. You take Russian Jewry. You're spending a fortune. You're sending in shlichim to show Russian Jewry Judaism is still alive, to try to help them, to encourage them, to inspire them. Very rarely will the hotel that in tourist puts you into be near the shul. In Moscow, we were actually bar mazel. We were lucky that the big in tourist hotel was within walking distance of the Akhapova shul. If you knew the way, it was about a 20-minute walk or even less. I don't want to minimize the concept of walking in Russia, because during the winter it can be very difficult. But other cities, you took Leningrad, the big hotels where they put the tourists, were in the suburbs, not in the city proper.
We were within walking distance.
Where?
Leningrad.
You were very, very fortunate. But this problem came up. Should the shlichim be Mechalel Shabbos? And here you come into a delicate question, because lachatchila, when Israel started doing this in the late 60s into the 70s, there was no Balei Tshuva movement in Russia. You had Chabad. Chabad was underground. But the large part of the Russian community, the Jewish community, they were far from knowing what's going on, what Yiddishkeit is about. Well, you want to spark them. The only way to spark them is to come into the synagogue on Shabbos, which was not so much a religious event for them, but a social event. The Jews could come together. No? Do we tell our people, be Mechalel Shabbos, get there, because your presence may spark Yiddishkeit? And again, Shalot Tetzei Miklal Yisrael, Chalel Olav Shabbat Achad, Kidei sheyishmor shabbatot habei. Exactly the same question. Exactly the same question. Then you take the other side of the coin. By the time you have balei tshuva, how does it look if you're telling them they can't ride on Shabbat, they can't use the metro on Shabbat, and you, the so-called rabbi, are coming in and using the metro on Shabbat? And this question, it's not a simple question. And this translates to all aspects of life. So you see, going back to Reb Menashe Klein and how this all began. Remember the Shiloh with the Russian that he invited Friday night, and the Russian is coming late and he's going to take a bus. Is he allowed to invite him? It opens up a world of questions. How do we paskin? What do we do? How do we view it? And we'll see next week what the Chabad people have to say, which is obvious. We'll see Reb Usher Weiss, see what he has to say on this topic. I'll show you something from Jewish Action, Mishpacha, Minchat Shmuel, trying to deal with Reb Moshe, and finally something very contemporary, my Shlichut in Petach Tikva, a Chabadnik. But the question is fascinating. And Yitzchak, you want a psak? You can go any way you want. If you want to be mekil, yesham mi l'smoch. You want to be machmir, yesham mi l'smoch. It's not an issue where you can give a black and white answer. There are a lot of other factors involved. There's a big difference if it's family, where you feel if you're not going to have them, you cut the umbilical cord, you're going to lose the family altogether. It's probably very important for a family to keep up a relationship. Or they can look at it as a shul and you have a parking lot open. What kind of message is this? All right, so what did we do today? Vasav Mega Tanheim. All right, we started our 61st year of teaching Torah. The Ribbono Shel Olam should give strength. And Ellie, you'll be back. You'll be a student. Your wife will allow it. Let me understand. We know the reality here in this class. Satan. I see you already have been exposed to Israeli society. You should know when the Iron Curtain fell, there's a company that makes, what are they called those? Vafalim, we call it, right? Vafalim. Company that makes the Vafalim in Haifa. It's very good with chocolate, excellent. I think it's called Mannheim, if I'm not mistaken, or Mann. Do you know that they had to double the size of the factory because when the Iron Curtain fell, the best gift you could bring to Russia were those Vafalim from Haifa. It's unbelievable. They doubled the size of the factory. Today, you can buy them in Moscow, in Leningrad. They're sold all over. Vafalim. I think the company is Mann. It's a Haifa company. And they love them in Russia. That particular brand, they love. All right, so what did we see today? We're continuing the question, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Vafalim. What the young man is eating. Yeah. What we can get 10 different brands here. When the Iron Curtain fell, this was something they never saw before in Russia. And Dafka, that factory, they loved the taste of the chocolate. What do you mean not kosher? It's under. It's made here. It's under two hashgachas. You can eat it off the street. Okay. So Baruch Hashem. What do we do today? Rav Shlomo Zalman and Center for the Jewish Future. The basic Gemara of Lifnei Iver. You have no idea how much can be said about Lifnei Iver. You'll deal with it in your Adaya. Are you allowed to sell non-kosher products? It's a serious question. There's a rabbinic prohibition. Can you sell tarfis? Can you sell nevelot? What if you do? You own a ShopRite? You own a Pathmark? I know Jews who owned a Pioneer. And this is an interesting Shaila. And when there's freedom of choice, there's evidently no lift naiva. There's a different problem that's raised here in the Kuntres Misaila there, and perhaps next week I'll mention it and show it to you in contemporary context. So the psak there is very simple. A cross, yes, a crucifix, no. The difference being that a crucifix is mamish avodah zarah, but a cross just shows identity. It's like a mug and David, so it doesn't mean anything beyond. Okay. Ellie, I don't know if you want to remain now. I just want to deal with some general, give out freebies. Maybe you want to go down and learn. I don't want to hold you up, because I don't want the kollel, if people will come, I don't want them to feel they have to stay longer. But let me just deal with some general issues. A Talmud asked me, he's writing about his great-grandfather, which is Jacob Feiner. It's the Feiner family. Rabbi Morris Feiner's Feiner's father. So Rabbi Jacob Feiner was very close with the Soloveitchik family. So there's one story I know. Again, I didn't live it. I wasn't alive yet. But I've heard this from people decades ago who were very close and say it's absolutely correct. Reb Moshe came to America. Reb Moshe was really caught in a quandary because his beloved son, Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi, was in Berlin. And he wanted to know, what's not like today? We have email and you're in touch daily, phone calls. So Din Zar, every summer, used to go to South Africa. Why did he go to South Africa? Bahatzlacha, everything should go great. Why did he go to South Africa? Because his mother lived there, his mother, brother, the family from Lithuania wound up there. So one year, probably is 19, I'm only guessing, probably 1930 probably, Reb Moshe asked him, do me a favor, go to South Africa via Berlin and visit my son. Let me know what's going on with my oldest son, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi. So the trip was more expensive. So Jacob Feiner gave Reb Moshe the money to give to Din Zar that he should be able to drop off in Berlin and see his son and from there go on to South Africa. So that's a story I was told. And the Soloveitchik family was extremely close to Jacob Feiner, afterwards Maris Feiner. They always were Maka Toiva, the chesed that he did. Now, so I just wanted to answer that question. Some of the freebies, let's see what I have here. A great deal, I just want to be sure it's right. It's got, this is for you. All of Rav Asher Weiss's Shayorim. If anyone wants, this is Hadin V'Hadayin. It's published by Bar Ilan. It deals with women's problems in the Batei Dinim. And it gives you the latest psakim. It's very important for a lawyer dealing with family issues. The latest psakim that the Dayanim, it tells you who the Batei Dinim are, who paskind, and what they paskind in some difficult cases.
What happened in the latest case where
the Aguila had a... He did not give a get. He did not give a get. No, you can't exhume the body, but he's a real mamzer. That's the answer. There is a get waiting for her, but I think she has to give $50,000 to get the get. It's from a Beis Din in Muncie that has a very poor reputation. This is a sermon that a rabbi preached in Toronto, I believe, on Greenberg and Koufax. If you like baseball, it's very, very interesting.
Give it to Michael.
The story goes that one day Solomon Schechter went for a walk with a young rabbinical student at the seminary. And he told the student that to be a successful rabbi in America, you need to know baseball. I only want to add that this took place at a seminary graduation. And Solomon Schechter, speaking to the graduates, said, and remember, you have to know baseball to succeed in America. Michael? The Pride of the Yankees. This is very interesting. It's about the movie, how the movie was made. And what I learned from this is one of the most famous speeches ever made in the United States, perhaps second only to Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, was Lou Gehrig's address, 1939. Do you know that there's no text of the address? And there's no recording? All we have is a drop from a movie reel.
The movie, right?
Of the event, but Gary Cooper in Pride of the Yankees reconstructed the talk. The talk that we quote today is really Gary Cooper, not Lou Gehrig. It's based upon Lou Gehrig. In addition, the New York Times put out a whole section on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Jackie Robinson. Very nicely done. Pass that down to Michael. Do you have the book, Vic?
Thank you.
The Urim, Journey to Open Orthodoxy. What book did you say you had for me?
Oh, I forgot to bring it again.
What
about tomorrow?
Say them. Jack, this is who we met. This is the Shiley you asked me about the glass top stone. You let me know what you conclude after reading it. Does anyone want this book? Two Gun Cone. This is about a Jewish kid from a firm family who winds up in London and becomes a general in the Chinese army. It's fascinating, fascinating what Jews...
Anybody else want it? I'll take it.
Yeah, so Yitz, you lend it, you'll be able to enjoy it together. Anyone want a picture of the Rav with Reb Chaim Heller standing on Amsterdam Avenue? Reb Chaim Heller. Yitz, this is for you on Eliezer Berkowitz. When they rebuke Eliezer Berkowitz, you'll see why, what went on here. Okay. Here's a very interesting article on a kid who was in a Turikate in America, and he winds up in the Mishmar HaGevul here in Israel. Why are South Koreans flocking to Israel for Bible study? I can testify. I can testify that that is correct. My grandson worked for a South Korean company, and he has a Talmud in South Korean. They think that's why we're so smart. This is a beautiful article, very well known, on Reb Moshe Feinstein, where this lady hugs him, the doctor, and she and his nephew is so upset. And Reb Moshe says, "Don't you dare say a word to her." She has her number on her arm. This is, anyone here from Chicago? This is about the rabbinate in Chicago, about the shuls, an early history. Very, very fascinating rabbanim. Great rabbanim was once there. And this is a telegram from the Rav asking the joint to support Rabbi Chiel Yaakovberg after World War II. This was just released from the archives of the Joint Distribution Committee. Very, very fascinating. Okay, and 1 second, we will tomorrow be in Shrat Hashem, we pick up where we left off. Herbert S. Goldstein and Benny Leonard.